Okay, my friends, have you listened to one of my dearest friends' podcast, the Human Hope Podcast? If you like what you're hearing over here, I really think you'll enjoy Human Hope. Carlos Whitaker is one of my favorite people of all time. We have been friends for over a decade. He's a husband, father, speaker, moment maker, spider killer, and is really good at teaching us how to human. Maybe you even caught his episode on this podcast in season one. He has been such an inspiring voice in our lives when we have needed him most. In a time where humanity is desperate to find hope, Carlos leads us in conversations that bring us just that. From fun discussions about everyday joy to polarizing and challenging topics, Carlos is showing even the most callous heart that there is still hope in humanity, which we all need. Tune in every Thursday to hear culturally relevant and timely conversations where hope is needed or where hope may already be evident. Listen and subscribe to Human Hope right now so you never miss an episode. Hey guys, I cannot wait for y'all to meet my friend, Mia Fields. She is someone I met and immediately felt kindred to. We're girls who want God to write impossible stories with our lives, and there is no question that He has done that in Mia's life. So let's jump right in and let her tell her story to build your faith and blow your mind. Welcome to Coffee with Kaylee, everybody. We have a very special guest, my Aussie friend here, Mia Fields.
Heyo.
Do you use your maiden name?
Yeah, I mean, I use both.
Yeah,
often. Okay. All right. Mia Fields, Mia Donovan, Mia Fields Donovan, whatever you want to call me.
I love it. That's how can people find you on the internet? Which one is it?
Just Mia Fields.
Just Mia Fields. That's
it. And then it has Donovan in brackets.
In case you need some clarification.
You know what it is? It's that I realized how difficult it is to change your name. And I was like, I still haven't got around to it.
It is a doozy. There's like a service. Someone.
What?
Yes.
This is revelation.
Yes. Before we record on this, we were discussing the services that we have employed since becoming parents.
Oh, yeah.
And this would be one that's, I didn't do it, but it happened after I got married. I was like, whoever invented that is a genius. Can't tell you what it's called, but I saw
it
somewhere.
It's just a Google search away.
It's a Google search away that someone will help you take care of it.
Okay, I'm on it.
Yeah, you need to do it. You need to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to have the same last name as my kid officially.
Yeah. I cannot wait for you to tell your story. But I want to go all the way back. Like, I think y'all's story, even finding each other, you and Joran, is so beautiful. And I love stories that give people hope. And that's what this podcast is about, and your story in finding your future husband and your journey to becoming a mother are both really beautiful, but to become really beautiful, sometimes things have to be really hard.
Yeah.
And a lot of people go through really hard things.
Yeah. You know, I think there's like an opportunity for an upgrade in every hard thing. And honestly, I don't know how. For me personally, I don't know how people do it without like faith, you know, without having like something to believe in. So, you know, it's funny because if I could go back, like I wouldn't change anything. But in the moments of waiting and having to walk things out in a way that felt like a little bit hopeless, you know, it was incredibly hard, and it was something that I wished I wasn't navigating at the time. But I look back and I think about what I got in that season. You know, there's this, a lot of people are like pretty confused about what faith is. Faith is literally just being convinced about who God is and, mm-hmm. and his nature. And you become more and more convinced the more you use your faith. You know, we can say, God, give me faith. But, you know, the Bible actually says he's already given it to us. He's given every person a measure of faith, and you actually grow it by using it. So, looking back, I'm really glad that like I've had an opportunity to use my faith, you know. So I had kind of seen God move in every single area of my life except for one, and that was in the area of like romantic relationships, which I think no girl wants to admit, because I think there's this weird thing where we feel like we can't talk about it, mm-hmm. and we feel like we have to be like, I'm superwoman and I'm okay, and I'm like, look at me, I'm Miss Independent. And I don't even know that that's the healthiest way to be. You know, there's something really beautiful about a partnership and about like wanting a partnership, and you don't have to feel ashamed about that. So I was, you know, my experience had been that over and over again, I'd just been really disappointed, and I'd never really even dated anyone for longer than like a month or two, because it just always ended up really horrible, you know, or like just disappointing. Which when you're the common denominator, you start to maybe question if you're doing something wrong, which I think is a great thing to like maybe like self-reflect. Yeah. But, you know, this just happened to be an area where I just didn't seem to see God in. You know, I'd seen him move in my finance. I'd seen him move in career, in friendships. So I knew that he was interested in relationships. I just couldn't figure out what this thing was. And I remember having this one moment where, you know, it was actually when our church, The Belonging, first started. There was like six of us in a basement. And, you know, I had this moment where I was sitting under a pool table, like just kind of praying and kind of crying out to God and saying, God, I want to believe you in this area, but I don't know how. And I haven't seen you move. And God said to me, like, will you let me heal the sickness with no name? Mm. And I was like, well, what's that? Like, you know, when you pray something, you're like, that wasn't me because I wouldn't maybe frame it up like that.
Know. You tell me what the sickness
what's the sickness?
Is.
With, no, no, no. And you know, he kind of started to reveal that, like, you know, it's you have become so disappointed in this area that it's like it's kind of filtering every, like it's your filter for everything I'm doing. And so you, like, even if I was doing something, you wouldn't recognize it because you don't know how to remove that filter. And so he was saying, would you let me heal that so you can see ahead differently? And I said, yeah, you know, and then God started like taking me on this journey where, you know, instead of finishing the year or finishing like different seasons disappointed and like feeling like I didn't see God move and I'm my experience has been terrible. Instead of living through my negative experience, I started living through the expectation that my experience was going to be different, which I think is such a massive thing, you know, to not, and if your history isn't, if your history with God, you know, feels like disappointing, it's a really great thing to go back and just find the moments that he did move and find the moments to be grateful for. And if you can't find them in your own life, look at somebody else's life and find them there and say, if God can do it for them, he can do it for me. So that's what I started to do. And then I had this moment where I was just in church. And I mean, I think God can speak to you anyway, but it was anywhere. But I think it was sweet that it was in our church. And I had this moment where I said, God, I'm going to keep trusting you in this area, but I really need to know what you're going to do. And, you know, that's the thing about God. He doesn't just say he knows the plans he has for us. Like, you know, he actually wants to let us in on them and for us to learn how to partner with him. And I saw this vision in like in church, which sounds incredibly cuckoo, but I'm like, but I love those moments in church, you know, especially when like, you know, when you realize like how intentional and how personal God is, that he actually really does want to speak into your life, give you solutions, give you answers, give you framework, give you something to partner with. And I saw in this vision, this warehouse full of just one-off pieces of furniture, amazing one-off pieces of furniture. And, God was beside me in the vision, I knew it was the Father heart of God. And he turned to me and he said, you can pick anything you want. And for me, like, you know, when God says something, it has so much, it's so loaded, you know, it's so simple, but it's so loaded. And for me, it was like, he was saying like regardless of any of the limitations or any of the parameters that people have put on you, like you're this age or like, you know, you're at this place in life or, you know, you live in the South and everybody's married at 19, you know, you're a lost cause. You know, and I was like maybe 32 or 33 at the time. And I mean, I'm not trying to be the poster child for how to get married in your 30s.
No,
but I am really interested in like giving people, you know, I think we should all be interested in having a testimony to give people hope for whatever season they're in.
Yes.
So I see this furniture warehouse and God says, you can pick anything you want. And I remember in the vision walking around and like, these one of amazing pieces of furniture and feeling like, oh yeah, this could be it. But every time I would get to the furniture, I'd feel like, no, that's not it. And honestly, that is how I'd felt in my dating relationships. Like I'd felt like I just don't have peace about this. Yes, it's technically really good, but I just don't have peace about it. And I know it's not for me. And I ended up going back to God after a while in this vision and saying like, I don't want to do this without you. Like I want you to pick with me. And he got down on my level and he said, you know, Mia, everything here is good. I'm the one who created everything here. Mm. And, you know, he's talking about like people, you know, like everything here is so good. But he said, there are things here that are better for you than other things. And then he whispers to me like, but if you really want me to pick for you and pick with you, I'll custom make it for you. But that means you're going to be empty handed for a little bit longer because custom made things take a little bit longer. Mm. And I remember saying to God, okay. And then the vision was over. And, you know, right there, like, have this opportunity to either be like, did I just totally make that up in my head? But I don't think I'm that creative. So I chose to believe it, and I chose to believe that God had really spoken to me. And to be honest, I went a little bit rogue. And I think maybe that's sometimes why God does speak to me, is because he knows I'm going to be a loudmouth about it. So I started telling all my friends, like, God's custom making me a husband. And I think they thought I was insane. But, you know, let your fruit speak for itself. So so I kind of went on this journey with God where I was looking for evidence of what he was doing instead of what he wasn't doing. And I think that so
that
many
is
people.
So good. So good.
You have like such an opportunity. You will find whatever you're looking for. So if you're looking for negativity, you will find it. If you're looking for like who's against you, you'll find it. If you're looking for like nothing's happening, you will find that. But if you're looking for like every day's got possibility, God can do anything. God can do a miracle. He's the God of the impossible. Like, and he really can make a way when there's nothing on the horizon line. If you're looking for that, you'll start to see like little rays of light on the horizon line. Mm. And so I just went on this journey where I like quite literally started looking for evidence of what God was doing, looking for evidence of like, you know, just him custom making something. And that didn't mean I was going like scouting out every boy. but like I was just it's like I put my antenna up and I was just like, I'm going to tune in. And, you know, I had this other moment a couple of months later where I was in church again, and they had just finished preaching about the walls of Jericho. And they said, you know, what do you do when you reach a promise but you hit a wall? And I was like, well, that feels like where I'm at. I've got a promise, but I don't actually know what to do. And, you know, I remember like them just talking about like sometimes you got to march around the wall a few times, you know. And so I went home because I'd gotten this other little promise from God where he'd said to me, it's in the mail. And I mean, when I talk about like I literally was looking for evidence, like sometimes it was like even not even in the right framework, but like he'd said to me, it's in the mail. So I go on to like Restoration Hardware and just look up hypothetically how long it takes to make custom-made furniture. And I was like, 12 weeks? Oh, Valentine's Day is in 12 weeks. Of course God's going to give it to me for
what
Valentine's
a beautiful
Day.
Story.
This is going to be amazing. Like, and, you know, that's so funny how we think God, we know what God's doing and we kind of keep trying to, like, put him in a box and keep trying to be like, okay, you're going to do it this way. But that's just not how he is, you know, and you know, faith isn't about putting your hope in how a situation will turn out. It's actually about putting your hope in what God is like, you know, because if you do that, then it really doesn't matter if a situation turns out, you know. You know, I've had so many moments where God has said to me, do you trust that I can keep my word to you even if this doesn't work out? And I've had to say yes, you know. And if you can't say yes, then I think that's like a good indicator that there's maybe like something that needs to be healed there. If you don't trust that God is for you, you know, and that he really can. So anyway, it's in the mail, walls of Jericho. And then I go home, and I was living in this apartment building, and I thought, I'm going to march around the mail building. Like, so I started marching around the mail building at like midnight, and I marched around 7 times, and I got around the 7th time, and then an angel appeared. No, that's just a joke.
Oh my gosh. I was like,
but wouldn't that be great? You know, but this is the great thing about faith, is I think we're waiting for this big moment. And like often faith is so, it's so convinced, you know, that it doesn't even need the big moment. It's just like, you know what? I know that heaven saw that. I know that it mattered.
Yeah.
I know that it was significant. I know that it was even a little bit foolish, you know, and come on, it's really weird to look out your window and see
like,
some random girl
making a couple laps.
She's on her 6th lap. Is she going to get to the 7th?
Where's
and then
the
have
trumpet?
A,
is it coming?
Yeah, have a little bit of a like shofar moment. But I got to the 7th lap and nothing happened. And I just prayed and I said, God, thanks that you saw that. And like that I can, you know, do things in the natural sometimes that partner with what I'm believing for in the spirit, you know. And that there's something to that as well, like just doing something in the natural that like is like almost like a stake in the ground. Mm-hmm. So I went to bed and nothing happened. And then in the morning when I woke up, I had 2 messages from people that I hadn't heard from in a long, long time. And both of them had dreams about me getting married. And one of them had said, you know, I had a dream you got married and it just happened, you know. And it was like your wedding was teal themed. And I was like, teal? I hate teal. But all the same, I went to Home Depot and I got all the teal color swatches and started writing stuff on the back of them and like things I was believing for on the back, which is quite funny. Because I was like, well, I need something to hold on to. And I honestly, I had this box full of evidence of things that God was doing.
That's so good.
And half of it seems very silly, like, and very foolish, but I'm so grateful that I have that, because I have like a physical reminder of like what God did and the journey with him.
Yeah.
Long story short, nothing was happening for ages, and I was going to Israel. So I thought, what a perfect place to look for evidence, you know?
Yeah. So, and let's go to ground zero. Yeah, let's go ground to the beginning. Zero.
Like, I'm like, I'm going to go to Jesus' old stomping ground, yeah, and I'm going to like go for it. And I remember, you know, going to the Sea of Galilee and thinking, you know, this place, lots of miracles have happened here. Like, you know, when, you know, the storm's been stilled, they've walked on water, you know, and the waves still remember what Jesus' footprints feel like. Mm. And when the disciples did everything they could in their power and they couldn't catch anything, Jesus said, try again. And they were like, they could have said, no, we've been disappointed. And so like, no, like I'm not putting my net out again, because what if I catch nothing again? And he said, just like, trust me, just try again. You know, and he's a carpenter and they're fishermen. They probably know best, but they still trust him, and they throw the net on the other side and they pull in more than they bargained for, you know? Like, and so I was at the Sea of Galilee and I thought, you know, this is a good place to like maybe put a stake in the ground. And I remember taking a rock from like a big rock from the side of the Sea of Galilee. And I thought, you know, I've seen God, you move in every area. And I just wrote marriage on the rock, and I just prayed over the rock and I threw it into the middle of the Sea of Galilee. And I'm like, I'm just going to leave this here till we see some movement. Now, is throwing a rock in the sea going to part the waters? I don't know. But you know, for me, it was like a significant moment, you know, and I, that whole trip, I just was looking for evidence of what God was doing. You know, I went to the Wailing Wall, and instead of pleading with God, I thanked him for the promise I already had, you know, because I think sometimes we're looking for a new promise when the old one hasn't happened. So we're like, God, speak into this, like, tell me what you're doing. And he's like, I have, I just need you to keep standing on that, you know, so I didn't go to the Wailing Wall and beg him to do something. I went to the Wailing Wall and I thanked him for what he'd already done. And I shoved my prayer in the Wailing Wall. But it was a gratitude prayer, not a please do this prayer. Which gratitude, that'll open the windows of heaven.
Absolutely.
And like one of the last things I did when I was in Israel is we went to the, I don't know if I've told this part before, but we went to this field and they were like, this is the Ruth and Boaz field. And I was like, huh. Like, well, that's a God orchestrated story. So then when everyone was going back to the bus, I stayed and I was like, got my hands out and I was like, God, thank you that I'm going to have a story like this.
Yes.
And then right after that, we went to this market and I thought, you know, I'm going to just get like a ring or something to remember this day by. And I went to this stall and they were selling rings, but they were all kind of too big. And I said to the woman, you know, do you have any rings that are smaller? And she says, no, the rings are for the men. Like kind of like that, you know, she's like, this is my best Israeli accent.
Yes, yes.
She says, the rings are for the men. And I was like, oh, okay. Do you have any women's rings? She goes, no, just for the men. And I was like, okay. So I pick up these rings trying to find one that's small enough and I just can't. But I have two rings in my hand and I don't, for whatever reason, I put one down and I said to her, do they all have like Hebrew sayings on them? And she said, yeah, every ring has something from the Torah. And all different. And I said, okay. And I said, and I put down one ring and I hand her the one that's in my hand. And I said, what does this ring say? And she says, oh, this ring, it says, I'm for my lover and my lover is for me. Oh. And I said, you know what, I'll take that ring. It doesn't fit me, but I'll take it. Well, I got back from Israel and I got this this email from my now husband and it said, out of nowhere, you know, so like, I know it's so special how like you can think there's absolutely nothing moving in your life. There is nothing like on the horizon line. There's not even any hope of movement, but God can bring it out of complete left field. And I get this email and it says, you probably don't remember me, but 2 years ago I saw you at your church and you looked at me and you smiled and I've remembered it ever since. And I wondered if you would want to go on a date this weekend. I don't live in Nashville anymore, but I would love to take you out. And I looked at it and, you know, then I obviously looked him up on Facebook.
Yeah, because right. I'm covered in head to toe gels right now. By the way.
But it was so funny because I read that email and I felt like God just say, see, I told you it was in the mail.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you meant the email. Gosh, you're actually really funny, God. You're actually really funny.
Which he's God, up to date. He's tech. He's advanced.
Honestly,
look at
he's very funny. Like, you know, it's in the mail, the email. Yeah. Like, I'm like,
wow,
like,
he works
so
with
fun.
What we got going on.
Yeah.
You know?
And it was just so special, like, because I got the email and I wrote back and I said, I was actually looking at the guy behind you, but, you know, I had to see what his sense of humor was like, you know?
I was like, wait, were you serious?
Yeah. I was looking at the guy behind you about like, sure, I'll go on a date with you. But I'd also gotten this like other word from someone, and I don't recommend giving people like specific marriage words, but this was from someone who I really trusted. And he said, like, I had this vision of your husband and he had dark hair. He was a year older than you. And he had a full head of hair, and I was like, thank you, Jesus.
we received it.
I was like, received. I partnered with that word. And then he said he worked in like a government job. It was kind of like an accountant, but it wasn't an accountant. It was something else to do with like systems. And he had a kind heart towards God, and he had a kind heart towards you. And, you know, when I got this email, like I looked, you know, and I don't, I really, this is not to say like, I don't think you should ever be so like focused and so like set on, you know, a prophetic word. I think you should partner with them, but you have to hold everything loosely.
Absolutely.
But you know, in the kindness of God, Jorn was all of those things. You know, he worked in government. He had dark hair and a full head of hair. He was like a year older than me. He has kind eyes. He has like soft heart towards God. So, you know, it was so special because I'm reading this email and looking at his photo. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's him. Like that's custom made. That's him. And then, you know, it's funny because when you get a promise, like, you know, it's not like then it's all just like, yay, now just float until you have a ring on your finger. It was like, you know, that week, I had a week where I could have partnered with like, well, my experience is that the guy doesn't show up, you know, on the first date. Or I could have partnered with my experience is that like his ex-girlfriend comes back into his life and I'm just like left, you know. But I chose in that moment to be like, I'm just going to stay in hope. I'm going to stay grateful and I'm just going to keep moving towards that. And then, you know, we went on our first date and then we got married 6 months later. And the crazy thing is like the ring that I bought in Israel ended up being Joran's ring. It like fit him perfectly and it ended up being his ring. And there's so many other details to that story, but I think it's just a reminder that God is so intentional about wanting us to have our own story. Like you don't have to copy everyone else's story. Yes, have things you look up to. Yes, have testimonies that give you faith, but you can have your own testimony and you can have your own story with God and it doesn't have to look like everybody else's. And to be honest, he doesn't want it to look like everybody else's. You know, he wants to do something that's so uniquely special just for you.
I know we're all looking for resources that can help us teach our kids and remind them the really true and really important things about them. And y'all, one of my BFFs, Annie F. Downs, has a brand new kids book that needs to bump to the top of your list. You may know Annie from her podcast, That Sounds Fun, or this podcast when she was a guest, or from the network that we're on together, the That Sounds Fun Network, or from her books for grown-ups, or even her first kids book, What Sounds Fun to You. But I wanted to be sure that you knew about this adorable new addition to her catalog. It is called So Happy to Know You. The heart of this picture book is to help your children learn early and often that being exactly who they are is the greatest gift. It's full of delightful illustrations and some alphabet fun, an A to Z look at all those special character qualities that can show our kids some of the amazing ways that God created them. Annie will teach the kids in your life to treasure how God made them special rather than trying to fit into others' expectations of them. Honestly, a message we can all learn from, right? So Happy to Know You releases on Tuesday, September 19th, and you can pre-order your copy right now at sohappytoknowyou.com. There are even some fun pre-order bonuses available, like a downloadable coloring page and a personalized book plate signed by Annie. Just go to sohappytoknowyou.com for all the details. I am so excited about something that has changed the game in my style journey. Do you feel like you're stuck in a fashion rut wearing the same things over and over and you just don't have time or energy to revamp your wardrobe? Well, I've got a solution for you and it's called Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix is like having your own personal style partner who is dedicated to helping you look and feel your best. You start by sharing your style preferences, sizes, and budget with a quick style quiz. Then, like magic, Stitch Fix sends you a curated selection of 5 amazing items right to your doorstep. Yep, you heard me right. No need to leave the house or spend hours browsing through stores. Your stylist will handpick pieces just for you, collaborating with you to create styles that you will absolutely love, all while keeping your budget in mind. But here's the best part. You get to try everything on in the comfort of your own home. No harsh dressing room lighting, can I get an amen, or long lines at the checkout. Keep what you love and send back the rest. And guess what? Shipping and returns are always free. Stitch Fix understands that style isn't a one-size-fits-all. They offer sizes from extra small to 3XL, so you're sure to find the perfect fit no matter what season of life that you're in. And here's the icing on the cake. Over time, Stitch Fix and their seasoned style experts get to know you even better. They'll match you with greater precision to find those perfect pieces based on your likes and dislikes. It's like having a personal fashion guru who's always one step ahead. So whether you're looking to revamp your wardrobe, try new styles and brands, or just simplify your fashion life, Stitch Fix has got you covered. Trust me, it is so easy and you are going to love the results. I love getting my Stitch Fix each month. They totally get my style and send me shirts, pants, and accessories that I would have picked out for myself. So thankful for Stitch Fix. They just get me and they're going to get you too. Try today at stitchfix.com/CWK and you'll get 25% off when you keep everything in your fix. That's stitchfix.com/CWK. stitchfix.com/CWK. I love that story because I've said it on here before, but a lot of times when God's given me a promise and a prophetic word, it was because I was about to need it.
Yeah.
And I think my young self and even Russell's young self, when we'd get a prophetic word, we're like, oh, this is awesome.
It's going to happen next week.
Yeah, like the Lord is good and he has given us favor and all these things, which is true. But we didn't know that when he said, you're on a fast track, that fast track would be 10 years.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
Like, but because we needed it.
Yeah.
We needed to hold on to something tangible.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful that in our story, it's similar. Like, I prayed for so many specific things mm-hmm. that came true. That, like, when hard things come in marriage, which they do.
You can look back.
Yes.
And we say, get to God look back. Did this.
Mm-hmm. And I love what you said, that it's not, like, basically, it's not prescriptive. Like, yeah. My story, your story, they're not the same, but God did similar things.
Yeah.
And doesn't it mean testimony? Like, he did it once, he'll do it again.
Yeah, do it again.
Do it again. And, like, that is the power of it. And that's why I was so excited for you to come tell your story because, first of all, that story is unbelievable. Like, I mean, it's believable. I believe it. My favorite is when I, like, encounter someone who's, like, deeply saturated in, like, the spirit and experiences. And they're like, you're not going to believe it. I'm like, oh, yes, I will.
Oh,
I will believe you.
I want a crazy story.
Yes.
I don't want, like, just nice stories that we, like, say, look what God did, but you're like, really, did he? Like, you know, I want stuff that's, like, that has the impossible all over it.
Yes.
And that has, like, I don't know, when you tell it, people feel it. Mm-hmm. Like, not just, like, say, oh, that's nice, you know?
Yeah.
We need more stories like that. We don't need, like, good ideas that we say God sponsored, you know. We don't need to even you know, I've been really challenged so much lately about just wait patiently for the Lord. Because, like, there really is, once God has given you a promise, you have every opportunity, especially in Western culture, to like micromanage heaven and make it happen on your terms. You know, I could have gone and, like, found someone and then, like, you know, kind of put them in this framework that God had given me and made it believable that God did this, you know? But, you know, God had said to me, mail comes to you. You don't have to go searching for it. Like, and I'm like, okay. So I would see, like, a good looking guy at church and I'd be like, you know what? Mail comes to you, you know?
Yeah.
All good. Like,
mail comes to you.
Yeah. Mail comes to you. Like, it's in the mail. Mail comes to you.
Yeah.
I think it's, you got to be so careful about not only just like getting a promise, but then not waiting for, like, what God wants to do, but waiting for how he wants to do it. Mm. You know, because half the time he's trying to reveal to you who he wants to be for you in this season.
And it grows. Like, every single experience, you do a small step of faith or a small step of this, mm-hmm. and he shows up. And then the next time you're like, okay, you did it, so you'll do it again.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when you pray for patience, he'll give you the opportunity to be patient.
Absolutely.
You know? When you pray
absolutely.
For peace, he will give you the opportunity to be peaceful in a stormy situation, you know. And I'm so thankful that I have those pillars to stand on and you do too. And that's just my hope for everyone is that you would give him the opportunity to show himself because he will. And you'll know, like, I was reading when Jesus reappeared after the resurrection and he was on the road with his disciples and they didn't recognize him, right? And
after he's revealed, after they break bread and they realize it and he vanishes, they said, didn't our souls burn as he was telling us stories?
Right.
And there's something to that. Like when you hear stories of God, there's like a burning in your soul that you're like, this seems unbelievable.
Yeah, but I recognize that God. Yeah.
I know it to be true.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I see it. Even if you've never met God like that before, like there's something about you meet someone who's like, who knows Jesus and is like a friend of God.
Yeah.
And there's just something about him that you're like, I want to be close to you.
Yeah.
Tell me more. You know, granted, that's if the person is like non the judgmental type of Christian,
right,
which is what we all aspire to be.
Yeah, let's try not to be.
Yeah, there's
those
plenty
kind
of people who are like, I'm a Christian, and they're like the worst person you've met. We don't advocate being like that.
No, and I don't think any Christian's perfect. I think everyone's just forgiven, and you know, no one's trying to win an award for being like the worst human on the planet. You know, like I don't think anyone's going into their day thinking, how can I like be like the best nominee for a horrible person?
That's true.
You know, but there is something about like, even when people don't know God and you tell your story and it's like it's full of testimony, you know, their spirits recognize it.
Yeah.
You know, I think sometimes we try and dumb things down for people that maybe are in a, you know, not in a faith culture. We try and dumb it down and be like super accessible and like, how can we be super relevant? And I'm kind of anti that, because I think you can be relatable without having to dumb down a story, because you've got to remember people still have a spirit, and like spirit's greatest longing is the things of God, and eternity's still written on their hearts. So when you talk about the things of like the unseen realm or the things that God wants to do for them, like, you know, they recognize it.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really know how my podcast was going to go. I was just like, I'm just going to do this. I felt like God said to do it, so I'm going to do it. And like, I think it was like by season four, I had Alex on. We're like just talking about the spirit of God.
The best.
We're just like, I was like, deep dive, you know? I was like, we're going to go all in, because people need the real deal of Jesus. They need him alive on the earth today.
Yeah.
They need his spirit. We all need a spirit. I need a spirit.
Yeah.
Desperately, I need a spirit.
And don't you want an advocate? Like,
yes.
Don't you want someone who is interested in your story? Like, I have this thing that I always say, because I think there's a massive disconnect, even in the church, of like, God can and he will. And I'm like, that is true, but he can and he will and he wants to.
Yeah.
And if you stop at he will, then you'll believe, often you'll believe he'll do it for everybody else except for you.
Ooh.
But I'm like, no, he can, he will, and he wants to. Like, he's a dad. Like, his heart is so for you. Like, half the time the desires that we have in our heart, God wants it to happen more than even you want it to happen. Mm. Like, it's just that he wants to bring it about in a way where you know it was him, you know? So I think, you know, there can be a disconnect there of people believing, like, hypothetically God can and will. But, you know, to really partner in your heart with, like, he truly cares about me. And he really wants to, you know, he really wants to be kind. He really wants to be intentional. He really wants to orchestrate something that I could not have done on my own, so that he would actually get the glory, you know?
Yeah. Like, how much more peace would you have if you knew the outcome, right? You're like, well, he's going to do it. So how much more peace would you have in it?
Yeah.
And that's where he's coming from, because he knows the end from the beginning.
Yep. Absolutely.
So the beauty of Jesus' life. He was not in a hurry.
Yeah.
He wasn't rushing. He wasn't concerned about all the things that everyone around him was so concerned with.
Totally.
You know, and like the first thing he said to the disciples on that road was, peace be with you.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
How much more peace? Like, when I think about if I knew every single detail how it was going to pan out, I feel peace.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we should be feeling that all the time, because he knows the end from the beginning.
Right. Honestly, it's like a friendship with someone, you know, where, you know, I might not know exactly what they're going to do or how they're going to do it, but like, I really trust them as a friend. And like, so I know what their heart is, you know, so I can trust that it's going to be good, whether it's in the framework that I understand or not.
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about, so obviously your husband is a gift from God,
oh,
right?
Yes.
But in life relationship, like, there's going to be hard things.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, how have you navigated since finding your like custom made restoration hardware perfect couch for you?
Yes.
A settee, if you will.
Yes.
I don't know. What do you think he was in the—
I think he's probably some massive he's probably like the cloud couch.
Sweet.
Yeah, he's probably the cloud. You know, it's so funny. The whole thing of like, I get a promise and then it's just all roses. Like, that's just not true.
Yeah.
You know, But I think you have to keep, if you've got a track record and you've got a promise from God, the great thing is, like, when you look back, you can go, okay, God did this over and over again. You can say God did this, you know. So, you know, one of the things we had to navigate was just like a breakdown in communication from being from different cultures, you know.
Yeah.
I was from Australia and he was from, like, the South. And like, so I would say things like, can you pack the hose up? And he would drive it back to Home Depot. And I would be like, why'd you do that? Or he would say, oh, where's my gym shirt? And I'll be like, it's on the bench. And he's like, we don't even own a bench. And I'm like, yes, we do. It's in the kitchen. It's on the bench. And he's like, we don't even own a bench. And I'm like, it's in the kitchen on the bench. Like, and, you know, I meant counter, but we don't say counter in Australia. We would say the bench, you know.
A counter is a bench.
A counter is a bench.
I learned this today. I'm today years old.
Yes.
I did not know that.
So, you know, so that has been quite funny. And then honestly, we're both incredibly strong personalities. Probably the biggest hurdle we had to get over was he was vegan when we met. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I had to like definitely like do some prayer and fasting about that.
Is he still?
No, he's like a meditarian now. He put on like 40 pounds of muscle and he was like, okay, I'm into meat now.
Yeah, let this be a lesson that there are deal breakers and then there are like things that can change about a person. You know, like I wouldn't say someone's meal preference is...
It's a deal breaker. No. It's a bit silly.
Things that change with the weather, like let them go.
Absolutely. Know? And, you know, we sometimes look at like... where someone is like 10 years from where we want to be and we want that version. And I'm like, but I can honestly say Joran has made me a way better version of myself and I hopefully have made him a way better version of himself, you know. I don't think you go into it being like, I think, yes, have like things in your heart that matter to you and that you can present to God and say this matters. But I don't think you know, you're not a finished product and you're not perfect.
That is so good, yes. You know?
So as far as like navigating stuff, like, you know, the language barrier thing, which of all things, who would have thought? And then we're both very strong personalities. You know, Joran has been incredibly good for me at learning to verbally apologize because I tend to be someone who I mean sorry and I will absolutely change my behavior, but I wasn't good at letting the person know like, hey, I am so sorry.
Oh, wow.
So he's way better at that. And he's actually a very transparent person, you know. He'll come and he'll be like, well, you know how I said, like, I don't know where your cake went. Well, I did eat it. And like, you know, he's like someone who like will fess up. And so that's like been challenging for me as well, where I, you know, I want to be someone who lives like really transparent, like as transparent as that, where you're just confessing about the stupidest things, you know, like cake, you know. So that's been really good. And I think he's also made me less reactive. You know, I was incredibly reactive in my 20s. Which I think was just self-protection, you know?
Yeah.
But it's amazing how, like, yeah, like you get with someone and they draw things out of you that maybe no one else could have. So those are some things that, like, I think we've had to navigate, you know?
Because I love that.
Yeah.
I talk a lot about on here, like, it should be when you're dating and you're in a space to, you're still making decisions about who you're picking.
Yeah.
It should be easy.
Yeah.
Like who you're, not the picking, not the dating, but your person.
Yeah.
Like it should be comfortable and peaceful.
Yeah. And you should be able to be yourself.
Yes. And it shouldn't be this, I think there's this toxic view of relationships that if there's a passion that is needed, that comes with it being volatile and like toxic, like fighting and then passionate makeup and then fighting. And like, that's like
what
love.
A horrible way to live.
Horrible way to live.
I imagine and, like, your cortisol you can have would passion. Get very high.
You could have passion in peaceful places.
Yeah.
You don't absolutely. Need. I think there's like this lie that like, well, we like if we're going to have a passionate romantic relationship, we also are going to fight passionately. And that.
I just don't think that's true.
Nope.
I think that's just a lack of maturity.
Yes.
You know, I think like if you can't fight well, you know, which is like you. Joran and I fight like lawyers. Like, you know, we will like both present our case and then decide like, you know, then make a ruling on it and decide who's got the stronger case. You know, that's kind of how we
fight.
That's
kind of how we are too. I'm like, we have disagreements. Like we disagree on things plenty, but we don't like fight.
Yeah, we have like
there's no yelling. There's
yeah, we
no
have
screaming.
A rule like that as well. Like no yelling, no screaming, no name calling.
No, that's just like, I can't even fathom calling him a name.
No.
I really can't.
No.
And that may sound shocking to some people.
Right.
Like, and I just, like, if that's the case, like, please, I don't know, go please find some therapy.
Yeah,
and
it doesn't
like,
help.
Yeah, no. Like, you don't want to live a life like that.
No. And, you know, can I put one other
please
thing
do.
Out there is, you know, if you're having a disagreement, no exaggerating.
Oh, I love that.
Just because that never goes well, you know?
Yeah, and it's unfair.
Yeah. You know, we have a rule. Well, it's not even a rule. It's just kind of an unspoken thing in our house that, you know, if you have said sorry and then, you know, if Jordan has said sorry for something and I've forgiven it, then, like, I can't keep penalizing him for that. And so I think it's really important, even if it's a pattern, you've got to give people, like, a chance to repent and, like, to change. And I don't think change always happens overnight. I think, you know, real forgiveness is, like, if God can forget it, so can you. Like, you know, and forgetting it is a bit of a choice, you know. So not that I'm encouraging, you know, the same bad behavior over and over again, but I am encouraging, like, if you're going to keep penalizing someone, I don't think anybody ever learns from shame. So that's something that we do in our house.
I love that because, yeah, if you are in a situation that someone is continuing to do what mm-hmm. they have apologized for, then they are not sorry or repentant.
Right.
In that situation, but bringing up things that you have forgiven is incredibly unfair. Like, God does not do that with us.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like you've really forgiven it then.
No.
It feels like you're gathering, like, ammunition for, like, the next fight so you can present your case,
yes.
which I think that's really dangerous.
Yes, it is. It's really unfair, and I encourage seeing, you know, some help or asking Holy Spirit, the ultimate counselor.
Always ask Holy Spirit.
Why am I doing this? What do I need to heal? What do I need to forgive? But something I personally do in disagreements or anything like that, or someone who's wronged me in any way, I don't say it's okay.
Yeah, that I think that's really
because
good.
It's not okay. And I say I forgive you, which is a lot harder to say. It was at first. It was like kind of like clunky to say.
Yeah.
Because you just want to be like, it's okay, it's fine.
Which I have a bad habit of doing that. And yeah. I've realized it's like, you know, you'd think I have a pretty strong personality. You'd think I'd be, I think everyone thinks I'm like confrontational as all get out. But, you know, actually I'm someone who, like, you know, there's a peacemaker side of me where I don't want to confront things. Mm. And I have a habit of, I'm good at forgiving. Like, and I'm quick to forgive. And I learned that from my mom because she grew up like abused and like, she's just so good at forgiving, you know? So I learned that from my mom and watching how she did it. But I think there is a difference between being quick to forgive and like not permitting bad behavior.
Right.
You know, or affirming bad behavior. You know, you don't have to say, oh, it's all right, you know?
Yeah.
It's not all right.
Because it's not.
You can change your behavior, but I forgive you and I love you.
Yep. I can forgive you. I will forgive you and we can move on.
Yeah.
But then you have to, then you have to forgive.
And you have to move on, you know?
Hi friends, one last break to share an amazing new sponsor. As a new mom, the importance of sleep is critical. Sleep is a top priority in our home. And that's why I'm so excited to partner with Hatch as we make sleep our simplest self-care routine with the Hatch Restore. The Hatch Restore is your bedside sleep guide. The innovative all-in-one dream machine is a sophisticated sound machine, light, and alarm clock beautifully designed by your bedside table. Good rest allows you to be the best version of yourself, which is why the Hatch Restore was engineered to help you form healthy sleep habits for your life. It teaches your body when it's time to sleep and when it's time to rise with light and sound cues. It can also lead you through meditations and mindfulness exercises that make the time before and after sleep peaceful and calm, if that's something you're into. When I tell you that I am obsessed with our Hatch Restore, I mean it. It has been a game changer for us at home and especially traveling on the bus. My favorite thing is the subtle clock so that I can see the time at any time without touching my phone. Our bedroom on the bus doesn't have any windows, so the sunrise alarm, don't worry, it doesn't get you up at sunrise. But whenever you'd like to get up, it mimics the sunrise. And it has been such a nice way to wake us up and let us know that it's daytime in our blackout back of the bus. The Hatch Restore has really transformed my sleeping patterns by supporting our natural circadian rhythms, and it really has made all the difference in the world. Right now, Hatch is offering our listeners $20 off your purchase of a Hatch Restore and free shipping at hatch.co/CWK. Sleep deeply and wake gently with the Restore. Go to hatch.co/CWK to get $20 off and free shipping. That's hatch.co/CWK. Okay, I want you to tell another epic Mia Field story, part of the reason you're here. I started doing Coffee with Kaylee's in real life at shows, like before the shows, and it is my favorite thing.
That's so fun.
I love it. It's turned into like an unofficial Bible study, basically, for me on the road. Like, yeah, I have like this sweet little community of girls who come together, and some husbands or some guys by themselves. Actually, I don't know if a guy's come by himself, but the girls come.
Maybe they should come and then, like, see what the girls are
doing. Honestly, if you're looking for a lady.
A beautiful story for them.
Yes, that's right. Yes, exactly.
Maybe there's someone listening and God's telling you to go to a coffee with Kaylee because you never know who'll be there.
You never know. Well, I really think it's sweet. I've looked around at the girls there, been like, hey, you guys all live in the same city and you all have this in common. Like, be friends. Like, look around, introduce yourselves, you know. But I say all that to say there's a lot of people at each of them. I'd say a small handful that are going through infertility or some kind of struggle. Going through, and I didn't actually have infertility. We had just like a year of trying, like 9 months of trying.
Yeah.
And so I, as much as I want to be like, I totally relate, there's pieces of our story that are definitely hard when it comes to having children, but it does not compare to what some of these stories I've heard. Yeah. And so I love giving a microphone, quite literally, to people who have been through the really hard stuff and can speak to and encourage what my people are going through.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because I sometimes hear other people's stories and I think, gosh, I didn't have to believe for 10 years, you know? I didn't have to navigate, like, the unknown. You know, I have so many people reach out and they'll say, you know, we've been basically given a diagnosis of, like, we don't know why, you know? I think that's sometimes harder than knowing why, you know, or having, like, factors that you know why. But, you know, Joran and I had been married for 2 or 3 years, but we got married old. So, like, we thought, oh gosh, we better get onto it with kids, even though God's on his own time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
God knew exactly what he was doing. So, if you got married at 40 and you want kids, then God knows what he's doing, you know? I got married at like 34, and then I was like 36. You know, we're like, yeah, we want kids. And so, we probably should start trying. And I'd had like a few health issues, not like major ones. Just I was quite anemic and didn't know why. So for like a year and a half, 2 years, I was going to doctors in America trying to figure out why I was so anemic. And am I allowed to say period on this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And, yeah. You know, and I had like, you know, like, I hope a boy is listening to this. It's going to be helpful for your future. But I had quite like incredibly heavy, painful periods, and they couldn't figure out why. And so, you know, the solution was always to try and offer me stronger pain meds. And I just was like, this is not helpful. And I ended up getting so anemic that I actually was like 2 points away from needing a blood transfusion they would give me even an iron transfusion. And so I was home in Australia one year for Christmas, and I just walked into a doctor off the street and I said, hey, look, this is the issues I'm having. And he said, oh, do you want to go down to Q-Scan, you know, like this afternoon? And I said, yeah, that's great. And it's like this place they do ultrasounds and x-rays and you can just walk in, you know. So I got the referral and I walked in and they did a scan. And that night I had this dream that I was pregnant with twins, 20 weeks pregnant with twins. And one was a bigger twin and one was smaller, which they were inside me, but I knew that. And I knew in my heart, like, one's bigger and one's smaller. I remember saying to God, is everything okay? Is everything okay? I say to God, there was a doctor in the room, but I knew the doctor in the dream was God. And he held my shoulders and he said, everything's okay. You know, everything's going to be okay. And I woke up and I didn't, you know, have like an interpretation for the dream like right away, but I just remember feeling peace and going, okay. And I remember saying to Jordan, I had this dream. I was pregnant with like two babies and one was bigger and one was smaller. And the doctor said everything was okay. And I was 20 weeks pregnant. Well, the next morning I actually got the report back from Q-Scan and they said, your womb has grown to 20 weeks pregnant and there's two tumors in there. One is bigger and one is smaller. And I remembered the doctor in the dream saying everything's okay, you've got nothing to worry about. And so in my heart I was like, I know this is not like some terminal diagnosis. I know it's like it's not going to be a huge deal and I know it's not going to prevent me from having kids. And but it's something we're going to have to deal with because I shouldn't be 20 weeks pregnant in my uterus, you know, and I shouldn't have tumors in there. And, you know, I took the results and I took it home to Nashville and found someone who is a fibroid specialist, because that's what they were fibroids, which, you know, sometimes there's a bit of confusion. People be like, oh my gosh, I've had cysts as well. And I'm like, yes, those are hard. This is not that, you know?
Yeah.
I also had those, but this was not that. These were like, you know, masses, like, you know, and if I showed you a photo now, you would probably be like a little bit like,
yeah, I don't do well with stuff like that.
Yeah, I love stuff like that. Like, I wanted to watch my cesarean, but they wouldn't let me.
Nope.
So I saw this doctor in Nashville, and she said, you know, okay, well, you know, we have to cut those out because they're taking up so much room that, like, even if you wanted to get pregnant, you couldn't. And I was like, okay. And I was like, kind of excited about it, because I was like, yes, this is like going to put me on the right track. It's going to get me back to, you know, feeling good. And so I was like, yeah, great. So keyhole surgery. And she said, and she just shook her head. And I was like, well, what do you mean? Because I was thinking they were just going to go in there and just do some like little tiny like incisions. And she said, no, actually, we have to do open abdominal surgery. And so I.
Like a C-section.
I had to have a C-section to cut them out. And I went into the hospital that day, and it was supposed to take like 2 or 3 hours, and it ended up taking about 7 hours. And my poor husband was in the waiting room, and they didn't come and get him for ages. But I remember waking up in recovery, and my husband, just with tears in his eyes, just said, love, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, but they've taken one of your ovaries as well. Mm. And I remember just looking at him and feeling a little bit of shame, you know, like that you didn't ask for this. Man, that's going to make me cry. Yeah.
Tears are also welcome here.
But, like, you didn't ask for this, and this is not your fault. And, like, kind of feeling like this is all me, you know. And I remember looking up at him and saying, that's okay, we'll just call the other one Hero Ovary, and it can be the hero of the story. and, you know, so I said, that's okay, we'll just, you know. And then we had to wait 6 months before we were even allowed to try again, because it was quite an aggressive surgery. The tumors were growing through the muscle of my uterus. You know, there's three kinds of fibroids. I have the ones you don't want and the ones that really do affect pregnancy. And so we had to wait 6 months because it was such an aggressive surgery. And then after 6 months, we started trying. And I'm telling you, every month we'd be so full of hope, because God had like really spoken to us during those 6 months and said, I'm going to take your story from a beautiful story to a miracle story. Mm. And I was kind of like, oh, look, what am I? Like a miracle, that means I'm going to have to believe. Like, means I'm going to need a miracle. Oh, gosh.
You're like, more faith, seriously.
I'm like, really? Can't we ever do anything the easy way, God?
Please.
Which, but you know what? Like,
yeah.
You know, the fruit of, like, doing things God's way is, like, is so different to the fruit of you just orchestrating yourself or doing it yourself, you know? So for 6 months, or, like, a year, like, for a year, we tried to get pregnant. And we, like, every month I would be, like, convinced I'm, like, full pregnant. And, like, I mean, to the point where I would be in denial. Like, I would be like, it's not a period, it's implantation bleeding. And I would tell myself it's implantation bleeding. And I would pee on the sticks, and I would make myself believe, like, yes, the line is going to come up, you know. And they never did, you know. And I know what that's like. I think every woman knows to a certain extent when you're trying for a kid and you have that in your heart, you know, to see that line not there is just, it actually, like, is so incredibly disappointing, you know, and to have to go through that every month, like the reminder of it every month is awful, you know. And so in that time, we didn't get pregnant, and we were just believing. And honestly, even before I had the surgery, I was really believing that God would heal me and that they would look and go, oh, the fibroids have disappeared. But that's not what happened. You know, I had to walk it out differently to the way I thought. But I still had this promise that God was going to give me a miracle, you know. And so we got like kind of 2 years into it, and just still hadn't got pregnant. And so I'd gone, you know, I ended up having to have, I can't remember what it's called, a sonohistogram or something like that.
I don't know.
I had that done, and then I had another scan, and they said, we're really sorry, but those tumors have grown back. And I was like so gutted, because I was like, I just don't want to have to do this again, you know. And again, I really believed I was going to get healed, and it just didn't happen the way I thought. So I had to go in for the surgery again. And this time they were able to do it a different way, because they were a little bit smaller. Like the first time they were literally the size of a mango and a tennis ball, you know. This time they were a bit smaller, but essentially it was preventing me getting pregnant and like creating like this infertility issue. I said that with, like, for those people listening, I said that with, like, air quote marks, infertility. it was creating an infertility issue because my uterus couldn't line properly, so nothing could implant properly. And anyway, they went in and they cut them out again, and then they started sending us to a fertility clinic, and they were basically like, you know, you're getting close to 40. I was like maybe 38 or 39 at the time. You're getting close to 40. You know, you've got one ovary. Your uterus keeps growing tumors. You know, it's not looking good. And I go, okay, like, and I just kind of made this like choice in my heart that I wasn't going to let anyone speak infertility over me.
Yeah.
You know, just because it kind of wasn't an infertility issue. It was a space issue.
Yeah.
I was just trying to evict some like false, like counterfeit versions of babies, you know. But, you know, I think it is important what you speak over yourself and that you don't let a diagnosis or something that's not of God, don't let that become your identity.
Yeah.
You know.
So good.
Because it can become part of your story. But, you know, you don't want the test to be the point. You want the testimony to be the point, you know. Mm. And so actually it was something that we never even shared with, like, anyone except for our community, you know. I didn't post about it on Instagram. And sometimes if you want to do that and you want to invite people along for the journey, that's wonderful. I love people to tell the story from the end to the beginning, you know, because I think there's something cool about that. So that we ended up going to fertility clinic, and they want us to try IUI, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's essentially just getting the sperm close to the finish line. So they basically put a catheter inside you, and they, instead of, like, this is such a good like doctor's lesson for people.
Teach them.
Come to my medical college. I will certify you in nothing. But
Mia MD over
here.
Yeah,
don't you worry. But anyway, IUI is this, just because I don't want to confuse it with IVF. Like, but IUI is where they take a catheter and they basically put the sperm into your uterus when you're ovulating, so it has like less far to travel.
Yeah.
So they
just really set you up to win.
Yeah. They're like, here, like run the short race, not the marathon.
Yeah.
So we did that like three times, and then they said you can't do it anymore, like, because it's not working. And so I convinced them to let me do it two more times. And on the fifth time, they basically just said, like, you're out of options, like you can't do this anymore, and like you're out of options. You could maybe try IVF, but that's probably not going to work either. And, you know, God hadn't said to me do IVF, you know, and that was something I didn't have peace about. So I'm not going to do something that, unless God has like given me framework to do it, you know. And I think, you know, in anything that you're doing, you really do have to go to God and say, like, how do you want to do this, and how do I partner with you? So, you know, they'd said to us, you're out of options. And I looked at the doctor and I said, you know, I understand you have to tell me what you're medically seeing. And I understand that, like, you know, we haven't got pregnant this far and, like, you've done your part. But respectfully, I'm not out of options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's why you have to get a promise from God. Because if you don't have a promise to hold on to, you will literally hold on to the words that have been spoken over you, and you'll hold on to the diagnosis that's been spoken over you. And that will become the loudest thing, and that will become the thing that, like, is always the reference point. For me and for Joran, our reference point was, like, God can, he will, and he wants to. And that he said, I'm taking your story from a beautiful story to a miracle story. So I said, respectfully, like, I disagree. I will call you when I'm pregnant. And, you know, we were actually at our church conference that week, like that day that I got that diagnosis. And I went back to the church conference, and, you know, Alex was there, who's been on your podcast. Alex was there, and she said, like, just halfway through, like, preaching, she goes, actually, Mia, do you mind if we pray for you? And I was like, yes. Like, you know, that's kind of vulnerable because, like, you know, like I said before, like, I knew it was me, you know, it wasn't Joran, you know. So you can either, like, partner with shame in that moment, like, oh, I did something wrong, or, like, I'm the problem or whatever. Or you can partner with, like, this is a great opportunity, like, to have people speak life over me and believe that God can and he will and he wants to. So she prayed for me, and she said, like, you know, just prayed that we would get pregnant. She said, you know, you've been fruitful in the natural, and we just believe you're going to be fruitful in the spirit as well, and fruitful in your womb. And 2 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant, which, you know, I don't think it's about like a magical moment, but I think it's so beautiful that, like, you know, every person in that room got to see a real life miracle, you know, like that when I said like, hey, I'm pregnant, you know, so many people messaged me like, oh my gosh, like I was there, I prayed for you. And I'm like, that's so wonderful, because it's not only like a something that like built my faith and like, you know, was like just such a beautiful thing to have people along the journey to partner with us, but it also builds their faith. And here's the crazy thing. Actually, in that meeting, there was another girl called Mia who was also struggling with infertility. Whoa. And she got pregnant as well, which I'm like, how cool is God that like, yes. like this girl's like, I know they're technically not praying for me, but my name is Mia, so I receive it. And honestly, that's faith. Like, you know, that's testimony, that's faith, you know, where you can like reach out and say like, God, even if it specifically isn't for me, I know that it is, because I know that you're not, you know, it's a pie. Everyone gets their own pie factory. It's not cutting up pieces of the pie and I'm taking the smallest piece. It's not like that. You know, it's like, she got a pie, I'll take a pie, you know? You know, so I'm like, which is just so beautiful. And then, you know, here the beautiful thing about like, you know, waiting on God is like, I know that I know that I know that I know that God did this for us. And it was really great to be able to call the fertility clinic and be like, guess what? I'm pregnant. And they were like, oh, I mean, okay. Like they weren't that excited, because I think they were like, dang it, we've just lost out on a bunch of money. But, you know, I think they thought I was crazy, but I'm like, I might be crazy, but I've got good fruit, because now I actually am pregnant. And again, it was that thing of like, you know, you may get a promise, you may get your breakthrough, and now you got to walk it out. Because, you know, pregnancy is a scary thing, especially your first pregnancy when you don't know what to expect. And like, I had to like really believe like the whole time, like, I'm not going to lose this baby. Mm. Nothing's going to be wrong. Everything's going to be okay. Like God has said she'll be a miracle story. And the beautiful thing was, we always had a girl's name. And you know, Joran secretly wanted to be a girl dad first. Hmm. We had a girl's name. We never really had a boy's name. And, you know, we found out we were having a girl. And honestly, it was a very miraculous pregnancy. I wasn't sick at all the whole time. I still just kept doing everything I was doing, you know. Yeah. And it was just a really easy pregnancy, you know. And we'd actually had a lot of people speak over a double portion. So actually one of the first things I did when I got pregnant was like, how many's in there? Is it just like one baby or two baby? Which is valid, because I'm a triplet. So, but, you know, when they did that, our first initial like ultrasound, they actually found that those tumors had grown back. And they said, look, these tumors are going to grow because there's so much, you know, blood and hormones and everything going to your womb, so they're going to grow with her. And then they at 20 weeks they also said actually her cord is marginal, which means, you know, when the placenta has like the umbilical cord, and the umbilical cord goes from the center of the placenta to the baby, when it's marginal, it means the cord is on the very edge of the placenta, which then they start to worry that this kid's going to be malnourished, they're going to have development issues, all that sort of thing, like they're going to be very small. And, you know, so we had like, cool, I've got tumors back in there again with my baby. One that's growing right near her face. And then I have like this marginal cord.
Yeah, but that's devastating news.
Yeah, devastating news. And like something that I could choose to really worry about. But because, you know, it's why I say get a promise. Get a promise from God. Yeah. Because like that is like, you can take that to the bank, you know. Mm-hmm. So we just chose not to worry about it, you know. And when I say chose, I mean it was a choice every day to not worry about it. And you know, the double portion for us was that, you know, I'd said to my doctor, you know, can we cut these tumors out when I have this baby, because I had to have a C-section. And she said, no, we can't, because there's going to be too much blood loss, which was devastating for me, because I was like, now I'm going to have another surgery.
This would have been your third, right?
Yeah, third plus a C-section. So I'm like, you can't just keep cutting into my stomach, you know? And, you know, she said, you know, there's a very, very small chance, like we've had it happen before when we deliver the baby, sometimes the fibroids deliver themselves. And I'm like, that sounds disgusting, but
but let's do it.
But I said, I'm going to have that. And she laughed and she goes, yeah, okay. And I remember when they delivered our little girl Booth, I was like lying on the table and they were cleaning her up, and one of the nurses goes, oh my gosh, what is that? And like my surgeon goes, ugh, it's a fibroid. And I was like, so, and I just go, yes. I said, cut it out, Amanda. Like, and then so they ended up being able to take all of those. And I thought, God, you're so faithful. Like, you know, you promised us a double portion. We got this double miracle of like our miracle girl who came out not malnourished, not like with any developmental things, came out absolutely perfect. And, you know, and we also got like, you know, a fresh start, like where I didn't have to, you know, they didn't have to close me up with tumors still inside me. Yeah. So, you know, God is so good.
I just love like your perspective on the whole story. Like most people would hear that and be like, I had a horrible pregnancy. I had like on the surface level, that is what that is. And you're like, yeah. I had a miracle story.
Oh my gosh, I had the greatest pregnancy
and
ever.
You did. But like exactly like what you said earlier, you find what you look for.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's my life mission too, to be like, I want to see your miracles in my life. Yeah. I want to see the impossible. And that's what we get to see. That's what you've seen.
Right.
And it's just quite literally a beautiful story, which is a song that Mia has on Spotify. You can go check it out.
It's, which is so funny. You know, one of the ways that I've walked through, you know, I write songs for a living. And one of the ways that I have dealt with every season is I've moved in the opposite spirit in the songs that I write, you know. So it's funny. We actually do have another song now called Miracle Story. You know, and like just writing these songs before you've actually seen the fulfillment of it, but writing them before you've even seen the beginning of the story, you know, writing them from a promise that you have.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's like the way that you should pray. I think that's the way that you should thank God. I think that's the way that you should like let your conversation frame your situation is like you're coming from the place of like God is good. God is doing something amazing because that's his nature.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you for telling us every bit of these stories. You're an inspiration. I'm so glad I have you in my life for the hard things.
I'm so glad I have you in my life. You've sent me my favorite baby things.
It's been an honor. You know?
You've saved my life with that baby Bjorn.
Guys, I have to make a must-have newborn
baby list.
Yeah, because I'm pretty passionate about it.
Yeah, and I wish I had
I just kept sending her stuff. I was like, you need this. It wasn't on your list. You need this.
Right, and honestly, it's all the stuff that I actually did need and the stuff that I thought I needed, I didn't need and hasn't been used. So,
you know, you live and you learn.
Yeah.
That's how we get there. Thank you for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Love you.
How incredible is she? She is one of those people you just want a pen and paper to write down every bit of wisdom that she has so that you never, ever forget it. She is incredible. Next week, we have one of my very best besties in the entire world here and a returning guest, Miss Daniela Young. If you're looking for more episodes and haven't heard hers, I highly recommend going back to episodes 21 and 22 this week while you wait for next week's episode. We'll talk to you then.